Thank you so much. I wanted to focus specifically on rules because it's the area where I'm most comfortable. And I want to foreshadow straight away that I promise this intervention will become more optimistic as it goes on. But I am forced to start in a fairly depressing place, building on what my co-panelist from Mexico was talking about in quoting the UNCTAD-SG in talking about a cascading crisis. Now, cascading crises, the waking up every morning and checking the news to find out what fresh hell greets you, has a lot of impacts. But one of the things that it certainly does is it makes governments loath to sign up to limits on their sovereignty and limits on their toolkits to handle whatever comes next. That is, it is natural, it is common, and it is completely understandable. And fundamentally, that's what global rules are. We are, as governments sign up to limits on their own sovereignty, their own ability to, they sign away some of the tools in their toolkit for a common good and in exchange for reciprocal commitments from other governments. And so in a area, in a climate of cascading crisis, where there is constantly a new horror facing policymakers and constantly demands from the public to address it, it is entirely understandable that governments are going to be, in many cases, loath to make commitments that are binding. But that doesn't mean that there is nothing we can do and that there is nothing that the system and this architecture can do. When I tend to think about advancing global rules, I tend to think about it in sort of four ways. You can make global rules broader, extend their scope to areas they have never previously covered before, basically introduce commitments in entirely new areas of endeavor or sub-areas of endeavor. That is going to be a challenge right now in many fields. It certainly is in trade. You can strengthen the rules. You can agree to deepen the obligations, deepen the commitments, whether it's to action or against action. But again, those are going to be tools that governments, I think, are going to be fairly miserly with in the current climate. You can make rules smarter. I think anyone who has ever worked on international treaties or sort of implementing international treaties has had at least one moment where they've looked at a provision written 15 years ago and thought, what the heck were they thinking? Sort of, who drafted this? How did they imagine this working? And going, surely there is a smarter way this could be written that would solve the problem. But in fact, you know, those provisions were written reflecting a delicate political balance at the time, an exchange of compromises, an exchange of sensitivities, navigating around landmines that have since been long buried. And the fact is that making them smarter can often really be a challenge because to reopen an agreement often creates more problems than it closes. But that leaves the fourth way that global rules can be advanced, and that is better implementation. We have the rules as they are, and they create a, in many cases, very permissive sandpit for governments, for policymakers, for regulators to operate in. And often the way that they choose to operate, even within those existing rules, can at times inadvertently create problems that were never intended and that can be resolved through dialogue, through exchange, by flagging issues. Looking at those oblique gains, what can be gained in the margins of negotiations, where perhaps you can't address the fundamental disagreement between members, but you can find ways that the way that members are operating within those agreements can be improved in a way that mitigates the damage they never intended to do or the consequences on things like small businesses, has a huge amount of potential, and this architecture is the perfect place to do it. One really obvious example that a number of panelists have brought up on the subject is the grain deal. You know, the invasion of Ukraine is not something that the UN has been able to resolve thus far. The fundamental question of who has sovereignty over Luhansk, Donetsk, Crimea. These are not questions that the UN has thus far been able to resolve in negotiations. But it is fair to say that neither of the parties in that conflict had intended to cause a food crisis in the developing world. And so the UN architecture was able to find an area of compromise obliquely in the margins of a major geopolitical crisis and find a path forward. That kind of oblique solution is exactly what the role of the international system and the rules-based framework should be, even as it pushes for broader, stronger, and smarter rules. At the same time, finding ways to make rules work better and finding ways to exchange what we are doing to fight climate change, what our local measures are on everything from food security to gender, in ways that make the world work better. And I might leave it there.
Thank you.